flying anyway. The fear of the unknown and Al-Qaeda and shoe bombers and, you know, various exploding toothpastes. And apparently lithium batteries. That's also a concern. It's now 1 o'clock. Right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. But think about this. You have to look no further than Kansas City to remember how great it used to be. Because look at the Kansas City Airport, which they want to destroy. Now, there's several reasons why they want to destroy the Kansas City Airport, KCI as it's called. The primary one is for security. Well, maybe there's two competing primary reasons. Security, and Sly James wants to be able to say, look what I did. Because the train, the streetcar, the toy streetcar, as they call it, it's just that. It's a toy. It's not a realistic way for the people of Kansas City to travel about their town, going from the city market to Crown Center. I mean, it sounds like something you might do on a Saturday once. Yeah, just once. Now, the folks from Nebraska and Iowa and Oklahoma will love the damn thing. But, you know, let's be honest here. It would be nice if the city of Kansas City were to actually do something for the people who live here. It's just a thought I had. I know tourists and all that income that comes from them, very important, you know, but everything should not be about, you know, luring people from Omaha and convention traffic to Kansas City. There should be a higher purpose for the city planning of this damned town. I think there should. It's just the fact that I live here, and I would like to have some source of civic pride beyond, you know, history and private organization. It'd be nice. But back to the idea of there used to be a time. Oh, yes, when you flew on an airplane and it was a pleasurable experience. That's why KCI was built the way it was built, so it could be customer-friendly. There used to be a time where it wasn't about antagonizing the passenger and holding them hostage, regardless of whether or not there was a hijacker or a hijacking. Because we've all been, I mean, let's be honest here, we've been hijacked by these threats, these fears. And that's the real central concern beyond political legacy for Sly James in regards to the Kansas City International Airport, is that they want to ensure that it is a safe place to fly from. We need to be afraid of that. You know, people hijacking airplanes out of KCI. I mean, for sure. It's a real serious threat. I'm not sure. I'm trying to think what's the greatest municipal terror organization we have here in town. God, I'll be able to come up with something, I'm sure. What is the greatest threat to us here in Kansas City? I mean, a lot of people would like to say the KCPD. And sure, hey. I mean, Daryl Forte went to Israel to learn how to police like the Israelis. Did that really happen? Did Daryl Forte, the chief of police, really go to Israel to learn about policing from the Israelis? Am I the only one that's just like, really? I mean, shouldn't, you know, like, maybe not the Israelis. Maybe we should go to Sweden or Finland. Or what's that other perfect country up there? Norway? Maybe we should have sent the chief of police there as opposed to sending the chief of police of the Kansas City Police Department. Not sure, was he doing a fact-finding mission? You know, maybe he went there just to feel better about the profiling policies of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. Because certainly going to Israel and seeing how they profile would make us feel better, would it not? We didn't have to. Like, just like, yeah, no, we pull over a couple black guys, but we never use bulldozers to destroy innocent Palestinians' homes. We don't do that. I mean, would that really be what it comes down to? Here we go. Kansas City Police Chief Forte studying tactics with, excuse me, not the Israeli police. And what's the difference, right? With the Israeli military. And, of course, the mainstream local media is keeping very quiet about the KCPD junket. Yeah, at KC Police, Israeli Border Police Surveillance Tower, staffed by two officers with, you see pictures of this stuff. I'm getting this off of Tony's KC. Tony's KC, a website for information on local events, politics, and chests. I don't recommend going there at work or if you're under the age of 17. We can go to the phones, I think. No, we don't have anyone. It's okay. 816-931-5534. It's 931-5534 if you are interested in calling into the radio program and having a conversation with me on the radio. You don't even have to have a conversation with me. You can just ramble. I'll let you ramble on for 30 seconds, which is a long time. Mindless dribble. You know, if you want a little verbal diarrhea, I don't mind. You're not going to hurt my feelings. 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI, you're on the radio.
Oh, this is Russ checking in from downtown.
Well, Russ, you would not be in the verbal diarrhea camp at all. What's on your mind?
Well, some people might say that, but
those are
each his own, I guess.
Those are only your enemy trollers on Huffington Post. What's on your mind tonight, Russ?
Well, that's true. That's true. Oh, just my Ukrainian wife. She showed me a video clip from the Duma. Well, not from the Duma in Russia, but from the main media in Russia, which I thought was, I guess you could, I don't have the URL. You would have to Google it, but it was entertaining. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but she translated. Basically, there were two pictures, one of President Obama and one of Putin, saying, you know, basically that Putin was the stronger of Obama. But it was some percentage, like 70 to 30. But what was entertaining, and I didn't need the translation, was that if the United States militarily gets involved in Ukraine, that Russia was prepared to nuke the United States, and they had some computer graphics showing missile launches from Russia, ICBMs, detonating with the nice little mushroom clouds in the United States. And I thought, wow, that's really intense.
Yeah, but I mean, realistic? I mean, do we...
Well, obviously not realistic, but still, that's pretty dramatic. I mean, that's something North Korea does all the time.
Sure. I mean, that's just kind of, you know, a blind projection of... I mean, the Russians invented that. The military parade with the missile launcher, you know, flatbeds. I mean, that is OG triple OG, right? I mean, that's...
Well, that's true.
I mean, that's just kind of... I mean, that's in their nature. It's a historical thing. It's like... You know, chest beating. I mean, we do similar things in America, right?
Well, I mean, the Blue Angels, I suppose, and
or CNN when they're going through the military catalog of what we can do to destroy our enemies. I mean,
no, that's true too. But it was still kind of illuminating to see that. I mean, I understand that the chance. You know, I know from being in the Air Force for a while that all the war games with NATO and the Warsaw
sure.
Pact was that they always escalated into tactical nuclear war, and then it went to strategic. So, but it was just, you know, it was kind of a throwback to the Cold War, I suppose.
I mean, no doubt.
But plus it was nice. It was pretty good computer graphics, I thought.
They probably
had, my wife was rather depressed today about the Crimean vote. That was anything new.
You know, I'm sure the Taiwanese were the ones that did the computer graphics on that one. I mean, let's be honest here. They're very good at it. But,
yeah.
You know, with what is taking place in the Ukraine, the hyperbole of nuclear Armageddon might not actually be too far off. Because Zbigniew Brzezinski said in his book, The Grand Chessboard, you know, published in 1997, that essentially the Ukraine is the difference between a Russia that is weak and contained or a Russia that has an imperial, you know, stakehold in Eurasia. I mean, Ukraine is that difference. It's what gives Russia a Eurasian empire or not. And that's clearly what's at play here, right? I mean, the more that comes out, the more we realize that, okay, the United States and its proxies, you know, people from the State Department, all kinds of non-governmental organizations, National Endowment for Democracy, these regular players that we see all the time, are projecting themselves, you know, into these political situations and exploiting them for the furtherance and the gain of the U.S. of A. Because the Orange Revolution was a pro-Western revolution, and it apparently was so horribly corrupt that it was, you know, eventually destroyed. And, I mean, what happened? The guy that was supposedly the enemy of the Orange Revolution ends up becoming the president of the Ukraine, popularly, narrow but popular. And, you know, what is the goal of the United States? Is to go in there, apparently, and, you know, try to change the situation for the benefit of us.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the Caspian, I think it's the Caspian Sea. I'm not sure where that is precisely in relation to Ukraine, if it's in Ukraine or what, or it's by the Black Sea necessarily. But supposedly there's been some oil finds in the Caspian Sea. But I also know the U.S. companies are exploring for using fracking in Ukraine for natural gas.
Right.
It might have rich deposits.
Ukraine is more of a geographical location, from what I understand.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's true. But it's also, when I was there, it was like, for me, it was like being in Missouri, believe it or not.
Right. Well, it's a breadbasket, right?
Well, exactly.
Agricultural.
But my wife is rather depressed about what's going on there for obvious reasons, because in the Crimean region, they're going, like, if you want to keep living there, you're going to have to become a Russian citizen.
Right.
You have to give up your Ukrainian citizenship.
From what I understand, Crimea was where a lot of, you know, the Russians who got state vacations would take state vacations back during the Soviet Union. That was kind of like their vacation spot. It was like the Disneyland of Russia.
Because that's their only warm water.
Well, not their only, but right. I mean, because you also have Sochi and these other places. But it was one of those spots that you would go. Now, Khrushchev, you know, the Soviet general secretary from the early 60s, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh, the foot.
Yeah, slapping his shoe on the table at the UN. He was Ukrainian, and one that tried to – he gave – Crimea back to the Ukrainians, I believe. I think that's...
He did, yeah.
Because he was Ukrainian ethnically. And it's just kind of one of those things where it's a sense of Russian pride. You get a feeling that it's really... They, you know, changed the ethnicity of Crimea a long time ago. They gave it back to the Ukrainians. And now that, you know, Russia's no longer run... I mean, you know, during the 90s when Russia was being plundered by the West and its own oligarchs and run by a drunkard and just basically a gangster, you know, corporate mafia state.
Right, because they used to have, like, their leaders would get sick and then just not be seen for a while and then they'd die, like, of natural causes.
But what Vladimir Putin and, you know, to a lesser extent, Dmitry Medvedev and his following of Vladimir Putin's orders, what they've done have, you know, really projected Russia into being a stable power player again in Eurasia. And that is a threat to the United States and our interests, or the interests of the elite here in controlling energy resources and how they flow globally. And that's really what we're seeing play out, is it not? But what I'm interested in is that you keep, you know, Vladimir Putin has said this, and I keep seeing this in alternative media sites, and I'm interested as to what your wife thinks, you know, about the neo-Nazis.
Well, the Sabota Party, what my wife was telling me is that she was going to give me some more details about it, but basically, you know, when the Soviet Union took over Ukraine before Germany invaded, a lot of the Ukrainian nationalists at that time didn't want to live under the communist system. So they helped the Germans, but what they didn't understand until later was that Hitler's plan was to take the Slavic people of Eastern Europe and turn them into serfs, where you wouldn't be, in other words, if you were Slavic, the plan of Hitler was where...
To make you a slave, make the Slavs
slaves. Well, not necessarily a serf, and nobody could be educated above the sixth grade level.
Is a serf what we call a white slave? Is that the term?
Well, you could be a serf anywhere, but you know, basically nobody could, no Ukrainian, or, well, no Slavic person could be educated above the sixth grade level. And what was planned was that you would have German, you know, I guess intelligentsia, German officers, whatever, in charge of large agrarian sections, and that, you know, that those foodstuffs would be sent back to the greater German Empire. I mean, that was Hitler's plan for the Slavic people. And then once, you know, once the Ukrainian nationalists found that out, et cetera, they turned and helped the Russians, you know, fight the Germans. But what's entertaining about Putin talking about neo-Nazis in Ukraine is that he seems to forget that Russia signed a non-aggression pact before Germany attacked Russia. In fact, when Operation Barbarossa happened, which was the attack of Germany against Russia, was that there were trains going the other way with nickel as part of the trade pact agreement, which, you know, like I said, Putin seems to have forgotten that part of the history, where Nazi Germany and Russia were allies at one point.
Well, right. I mean, that was the story of Europe in the first part of the 20th century, is that there were all kinds of agreements and counter-agreements and these secret documents that were put together. I mean, it was just that's why the continent had war for 50 years, is because they had all this diplomatic intrigue taking place.
Well, basically, I mean, if you want to get, it was basically the 1%. I mean, let's get real. It was the 1% making deals with each other. At, you know, the power brokers, whatever you want to call them, making deals for each other.
Sure.
But, you know, there's no doubt that some of the members of the Svoboda Party are hardcore ultra-nationalists, but that doesn't necessarily make them neo-Nazis. Because, like I've said before, if...
But that Oleg guy, I think, I'm done on these Ukrainian pronunciations.
Names.
Yeah, I'm not even going to give it a shot. But I've definitely seen a picture of him, unless it was the angle, throwing up the whole Nazi salute and getting the sense that, you know, when you have these political instabilities, no matter where you are, and if we're talking about the Western world, there's a certain tendency to just kind of revert back to nationalism. And once you go down that route, you get some of the guys with their Nazi regalia show up too.
Well, you know, part of that's for shock value.
Yeah, no, it, I mean, absolutely.
I mean, in Germany, you can get arrested for doing that.
Absolutely.
There was a dog that was arrested for that in Germany. His owner was, for teaching the dog the Nazi salute.
Right. Well, so there you go. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but I think it's meant to be. Yeah, I mean, it's meant to get people's attentions. That's why you're doing it. You're not throwing up a Nazi salute because you want to be somebody's friend, you know?
Well, you got to understand, I'm going to let you go pretty quick, but like in my wife's city in Venezia, that was the second wolf lair for Adolf Hitler. The bunker still exists in her city. In fact, they were going to turn it into a tourist attraction. But I think it's a little bit too simple to, you know, there's a lot of propaganda going on from not only Russia, but, you know, I'm sure some propaganda from
But is that not the MO of the United States when it comes to political instability? We don't side with the populists who talk about redistributing land to the poor and coming up with social welfare programs. Unfortunately, the history of the United States since World War II has been supporting the fascists. It's been supporting the guys who are willing to, you know, manipulate the government for the purposes of benefiting industry and Western finance. So,
well, right, but I mean, if you look at, I'm going to go out on a limb here because I don't know 100%. But I think if you look at almost every political movement, it's the people that are willing to go on the streets and bust heads. You know, they're always going to be. They're going to be. You know, they got a passion. Let's just put it that way. Whether it's far right or far left.
No, that's, I mean, and fair enough. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Russ, we appreciate your phone call.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, so about 20 minutes after the hour of one right here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. Got a quick message for you, and we'll be right back with more Paragon Radio. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI.
Hi, I'm Michael Hogue. Monday on the Arts Magazine Show, we'll talk to guests from the Westport Center for the Arts, and they're going to tell us about their Brown Bag Concert Series and their upcoming concert on March the 21st. Then later, actor and musician Ron Roberts will be with us to tell us about his new book. It's a true crime piece with a lot of Kansas City connections. It's called Hollywood Grifter. So you join us Monday, 12 o'clock noon, Arts Magazine show.
All right, check it out. 12 o'clock noon right here on Community Radio, Arts Magazine. Get yourself some Guinness, some Irish whiskey, you know, a nice little redheaded girl, and listen to some KKFI tomorrow. We'll have live Aaron Gobra. We'll have some live updates from the parade. We'll have the DJs will be looking out the window going, you know, you look down 39th Street, and if
there's some people going to it anyway.
You got the right eyes. Check it out. You know, it's a good thing that they do the parade in Westport now on Broadway, because they don't have the same level of muggings, shootings, lootings, beatings, robberies, you know, assaults. I mean, it's good. It's good that they've moved it, you know, into Midtown.
From the Power and Light.
Well, I mean, that might be part of it. Power and Light's like, oh, hell no. I mean, because let's be honest here, it's the St. Patrick's Day parade can get a little heavy.
Right.
You got all these people from all these different parts of town that never hang out any other time of the year, but they find themselves standing on the street corner drunk.
And then all going, let's drink some more, so they go to Westport. It's after the parade when it gets crazy.
I mean, can't we all just come together and enjoy the Marching Cobras and go back home?
Right.
Or go back to the club or whatever it is. Enjoy our bottle of whatever and the Marching Cobras and just get along. I think we can.
And don't forget, like, Joe the Plumber's truck goes by with the big toilet.
Have you been
to the parade lately?
Joe the Plumber, the guy from Ohio?
No, it's another. I didn't want to give anybody a free plug.
Now, a lot of that can certainly be, like, advertising.
Oh,
what is that sound? What is that?
Oh, that's my computer telling me that it's not going to work, so I might as well shut it down.
Your computer's telling you it's not going to work?
It's saying, nope, not going to do it.
Huh.
I did this thing where, you know, I don't know if you remember a couple months ago, I told you I found this, like, on Christmas Eve for, like, a stupid steal, so I went ahead and bought it, right? And then in my attempt to be tech savvy, and I put on the ad block that you... I had talked about. Mm-hmm. And then I put on some security. And
yeah, there you go.
Then put on some kind of master security that I can't remember how to
overcome. So you don't know
so
the password?
So it won't connect to the internet.
Oh.
So I got to figure out what my backdoor password is.
You got to find some kid half your age that's going to
exactly.
be really, really condescending towards
I'm
you.
I'm waiting for my sixth grader to come home.
The power button is located. It's the blinking light.
Right.
Try pressing that, sir. The power button, sir. It controls the power to the computer, sir. Yeah, it's...
So, yeah.
Those guys. It's not their fault. They've never had girlfriends.
Right. Now, do you know about the deep web? Is that
a real thing? Oh, yeah.
Is that a real thing, or is that just a
the deep web.
House of Cards deal? Have you
Have
started
you been
that?
Watching House of Cards?
Yeah, when you brought it up last year, whenever I
oh my God, the House of Cards is
out,
so
man.
Damn good.
I know, and I'm
hey, do you want to
pacing myself on this second season?
Let's put a couple of Fela Kuti songs on and just watch some House of Cards. I got a Netflix connection.
Man, that yeah, it's a great show.
Oh, it's amazing.
I mean, Kevin Spacey is a great actor. I was talking about this last night. Before I go any further, let me give a shout-out to Josh, the pizza delivery guy. That
Thanks, Josh.
Really did hook me up here, and he'll probably do so in the future. Next time, I'll bring some vegetarian fare for...
That's all right. There's no vegetarians here.
That's right. And that's the other thing. I thought they'd be here, so I, like, brought extra.
I don't know where those guys... I mean,
it's all good.
Apparently, they're getting Irish early. No, but House of Cards is amazing.
Yes.
It really is amazing. Have you started the second season?
I just started it. Did you watch it all? That's why I brought up the...
I've been trying to...
Pace yourself this time?
They have this thing called binge watching.
I know.
Which I remember
watching... I watched the first season in like maybe 3 days.
It's not healthy to do that.
It's not. That involved like... I can't come to work today. Sorry, boss. I'm not feeling well today. And then watching... I don't know.
Did you really do that?
No, I didn't call it sick. No, but...
Yeah, he bought it, honey. Go to the store and get us some beer. He totally bought it.
Oh, wait. I waited till she went to work. No.
There you go.
So I could sit there. It's like drinking beer at 9 o'clock in the morning watching a politics show. I did not do that, but that would be fun.
That would be a lot of fun.
That was back in my college days. I did stuff like that.
Sure.
But it was more like Nintendo then, but...
Now, the scary thing is that if House of Cards is in any way, shape, or form based upon reality whatsoever, and my God, it seems to be.
And that's what I was going to say is the scary thing is it's not over the top like hiding a murder, although sometimes maybe, but...
No, there's been several murders.
Right, right.
I mean, he does... I mean, I'm not... Spoiler alert, these two seasons of the show have already been released. If you
haven't
watched
them, that's the problem with that. Is like there is no spoiler alert stuff anymore because
they
on
just
day
put it all
one,
out there.
There are people
right.
who... But, you know... And this is kind of getting into TV stuff, but it is very much, I don't want to say real, because, again, you hope it's a little different than that, but...
You'd like to think that the vice president does not kill people. Do you think Joe Biden's a murderer?
Well, I've heard. That's the thing. When you and that's the part that's scary is that when you listen to like the commentators and the people who, I know inside this and that. You know, they talk about this stuff. I mean, you've heard that Nixon was in on the Kennedy assassination. You know what I mean?
Well,
that's
unofficial though. Now,
I mean, Spiro T. Agnew was removed from the White House.
Right.
As a you know, corrupt
tax fraud, I think, is what got him removed. No?
Yeah, I think some sort of fraud. They got him. Well, that's how they get everybody. It's like, we know how you got the money. We can't prove how you got the money, but damn it, you got the money and you're not paying taxes on it. So I don't know. Could you get away with a crime if all you did was just put, like, found money, $1 million? I'll pay the tax on that. I mean, you know what I mean? Could you...
Because
that's what they get them for tax evasion.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
You'd like to think that maybe Washington is not quite that bad, but let's be honest here.
But, yeah, I mean, seriously,
probably is that bad.
You do get the feeling like there's a few scenes in there where, you know, you got the high-level politicians standing in a room shaking hands and... You know, glad handing one another and then turning around and telling their little prospective posses, God, I hate that son of a... You know what I mean? And looking in the room, I don't know if you saw, like, the scenes where they were, like, doing the swearing in where, you know, you got the two guys who are in the same party, but they're standing across the room from each other, looking at each other, smiling, doing the heads of, hey, man, how you doing? And then telling their little group, like, I hate that son of a gun. And it's like, you know, he's... They're... trying to deal out the innuendo.
Really not the worst part of it. The whole subversion of democracy, you know, submission to corporate, you know, interest if it serves your own personal interests, and the whole murder thing.
Right. I mean...
The whole murdering journalist thing is...
And you, again, you think or you hope that that's not true, but then, it's again, this guy, like,
but the
just
mentality
last
of
year that died and his engine blew up.
Who?
The guy that was writing the story on Stanley McChrystal, and then,
Hastings, right?
I mean, you know what I'm saying? This is like ripped from the headlines. I mean, you know what I mean?
It is fair that, you know, Michael Hastings, the journalist who wrote that story about Stanley McChrystal Balls and said that Stanley McChrystal Balls, who was the former commander of the U.S. Army in Afghanistan, you know, had said derogatory things about the president, you know, they said in that if any of... You know, the stuff that was said, you know, we're going to come after you, buddy. And it's like the guys that said that who were, you know, because Stanley McChrystal Balls is one of those special operations group people. You know, the people closest to him, you know, those are the people that do stuff like what happened to that journalist that, you know, can hack their car's, you know, computer systems and essentially destroy the car, crash the car. Those are precisely the people. Who would do that kind of stuff?
And here's the crazy part, okay? I say ripped from the headlines, but it's not because it was written before the headline. You know what I mean? They were doing this before. It's not like they saw Michael Hastings? It's not like they saw this story and said, hey, let's work that into a plot. They were already talking about killing reporters in their story. Just like... This just hit me, right? Because I've only watched, like, the first two episodes, I think, right? So, like, the general who had raped.
Yeah, okay.
So here's this guy, and you go, wow, that's so over the top. Or maybe you say, that's ripped from the headlines, because like I was talking about just last week, right? Like all these generals that are in charge of investigating sexual assault are sexual assaulters. You know what I mean? That's prescient.
Right? Is that
No, it is. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, they wrote this down, and then
and also the
bam.
You know, they when they reference the date in that show, it is now.
Yeah, they let you know that, yeah,
we're talking
Obama's
about
a white
right
guy.
Evan now. Yeah, Obama's a white guy.
He's still milquetoast, and
no,
he's still
sure
under the thumb of some unknown billionaire.
Did you see the Between the Two Ferns with Obama? Are you familiar with what that program
is? I am not
Zach
familiar
Galifianakis
with it. Funny or Die, I'm familiar with and watched a couple of
Between
things.
Between the Two Ferns is an amazing interview program that Zach Galifianakis does, where he essentially
does the Ali G on him, right?
I mean, not, but they know who he is, so it's like
it's the people who don't know.
I don't know
that's what
well,
it is.
I don't know if it's scripted or what's going on there. But when Zach goes, you know, how do you feel about being the last black president? And you're just like going, damn. Because that kind of maybe seems like that's part of the agenda. You know, that we'll give a black guy a shot, but we'll insert him in at the wrong time, and we'll ensure that there'll never be another black president. That's, you know, certainly. Certainly.
I think demographics might have something to do with that.
Well, you know, I never thought there'd be, I thought there'd be a Mexican president before there was a black president.
I thought there would be a black president, but that, I didn't think it would be now. I thought maybe this next time around, you know, the 16, that era. But there would only be one.
One term?
Yeah, or not one term, but that there will only be like one black president. I mean, I don't think, because I think, and this is not probably the way I should look at it, but like looking at it straight, if I look at like racial politics, I see the Hispanic numbers outpacing black numbers, blacks, you know, and then when you factor in the splits and within each race and, you know, the Democrat versus Republican and you do all of that and then you still, and then of course you got to factor in white people, right? But when you do all that, I just don't see them putting together that number.
Black people or Mexicans?
Black people.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I don't see us, I shouldn't say them, but you know what I mean? I don't see us putting that together again. Unless and until we truly do get to a post-racial United States.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta think that some part of liberals, you know, affection towards Obama was Bush, but then there's also a white guilt thing going on a little
right
bit.
Right, and they've done that now, so it's not like I have to do that.
Yeah,
and not to be crass, but it's like, you know,
but the white
I
guilt thing.
Black guys in college, but I'm not marrying one.
Right.
I'm just saying, you do that. It's an experiment. It's I don't want to say it's that, again, not to be that crass about it, but at the same time, there are the president's numbers and all that jazz right now. There's an awful lot of people that are awful lot of pissed off. That I don't know. Would they be that? I mean, even people who voted for him, and I'm not, again, saying, like, if you turned against Obama, it's because you don't like him because he's black.
You mean people like you, Mike?
No, not like me, because I was...
You just said people that voted for him, so...
Right, I was never a big supporter, like, you know what I mean? I could see that of the two... Sure, I would have chosen Obama over Ron.
Well, we kind of talked about this. Well, I mean, right. It's just I'm done making those decisions,
right,
though, the lesser of the two evil decisions. But we talked about this briefly last week off air, is that if nothing else, Obama has really kind of manipulated, perverted you know, destroyed the whole notion that Martin Luther King had of judge a man based upon the content of his character and not the color of his skin, because a lot of Obama's enemies, I think, are uncomfortable with the color of his skin, mm-hmm. because he's not really, I mean, this notion that Obama is some, you know, ultra leftist fringe, you know,
right,
you know, communist manifesto reading, Mao's little red book carrying, you know, pinko, is just right. So far from the reality of the situation.
And I'm constantly just amazed. Like, you hear, like, earlier this week, I'm listening to KKFI and Democracy Now!, and they had some folks on there who are just outraged that he has so, like, he's outstripped all other presidents on deportations and
intimidation
and
of the press.
And then you turn over Fox, and they're saying, you know, He's important Mexicans, I'm telling you. And it's like, wait, what? You know, it's like,
we have to go to the no-spin zone now to just just reflect on how perverse things have become.
Right.
But on the flip side of that, you have, you know, a lot of, you know, like, you know, black people that support Obama because he's black.
Right.
Because,
and they don't even know what the policy is.
And it's just, I mean, it's, and that I can, I mean, I sympathize with that because it's just, you know, lots of frustration. I mean, really lots of frustration. Just really going, you know, God damn it.
Right.
You know, we have to be unified, you know, we got to, right. You know, because this is, it's really just like Galifianakis said, how
well,
do you
remember
feel
Cleaver,
about being the last
Remember
black
Cleaver
president?
Went through that in the primaries with, you know, not wanting to support him because he was like, it's Hillary. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like a lockstep thing, but now it almost has to be.
Sure. Right. So, but unfortunate that we have to, where we're at this point. But, you know, you look forward to, I don't, but some people do, look forward to 2016. And I mean, the idea, you know, again, it comes down to that we're going to see some fundamental change in the political leadership of this country from the top down is just foolish and stupid. Those are the people who are most visible. They are the people that we have the collective national conversation about. You know, these are the so-called celebrities, you know. Right. If Washington, D.C. is Hollywood for ugly people, I mean, these are those reality show, you know, people. But, I mean, is there anyone to be excited about this prospect of Hillary Clinton or this prospect of Rand Paul? Or a Bush, another Bush, or something like that. I mean, there is clearly nothing beneficial that's going to come out of this in regards to the United States people or our concepts of freedom, the idealism of the Constitution, et cetera. I mean, I, you know, and people that listen to this show on a regular basis know that I feel as though I've come to some sort of conclusion in regards to the political governance of this country and the most realistic way for us to move forward and to continue the progress of the U.S. is to decentralize the power of the United States. And that essentially is, there's many facets to this, but primarily what we're talking about is neutering the federal government and not completely, but putting it back in its place.
All right.
Because it's, and you know, I know maybe I'm not just talking about the idea of you know, returning power back to, you know, some states' rights argument or something like that. But literally, we look to the top at this political entity that is very far away from us, both physically and economically, and think that there's somehow going to be a sea change from it. Sea change is going to happen, you know, at the local level. You know, it's going to be Kansas City changing politically, helping affect the state of Missouri change politically, and the state of Missouri will have to help the federal government change politically. It's going to happen in that direction, in that succession, and it can. And you have to realize, I mean,
again, like gay marriage and marijuana,
right? Exactly,
you know, happening right now, watching it happen. Like cities saying, "Ah, screw that, we're not going to arrest people." Now, what are you going to do? You send some FBI agents down to the park? You know, and then it's like the states, and we're going to open up some dispensaries. What are you going to do? Raid them? Raid them all? You can't. You can go only go so when it was California, they couldn't handle it. You know what I mean? Like, the feds could not.
Couldn't do it all, no.
I mean, you could make an example out of the city of Greenwood, but that's okay because the next city over ain't going to just unplant all those plants and undo that whole. And the demand is there. Right. You know? So, yeah, you're right. That's the way the real change will, and I guess always has occurred, right?
But this is when I get, it's going to sound like I got a tea party in my mouth, is that the IRS is really the problem here.
Because that's what funds them or allows them.
It's the backward funding of a Republican government, and I mean small R Republican, i.e. a constitutional Republic government, in that you have a federal government stealing money from individuals to take to Washington, D.C., as opposed to the money going, you know, to the local governments up and then to D.C.
Right. They can shut off the valve to you.
D.C.
should not be. But you can't shut off their valve.
D.C. should not be redistributing the wealth of the people. Right. You know, it should be getting a piece of that, you know, through fees that would be associated with the running of a large national government. It shouldn't be just a straight up jack, which is what it is to support, you know, a military empire that is global in nature. That is still, I mean, International Military Violence Day is coming up on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, and it looks like there's going to have to be something in the Ukraine, right?
I heard you saying that earlier, and that goes back to the Iraq invasion was on March 19th.
Libya. Libya.
Yeah, that's right. We did do that in Libya.
That's when I first got truly motivated to start celebrating International Military Violence Day. But there's something about this time of year. March, of course, named after Mars, the god of war.
Springtime, the time when kings go to war.
Right, there you go. Well, it becomes
like, man, I'm tired. I mean, I'm all bundled up in my cave. I'm cold. Need something to do.
Go kick some ass.
Sounds like an idea. Let's go.
So, the Ukraine. It'll be fun, won't it? Look forward to that.
But they're going to get it. I mean, what do you...
Who's going to get it?
Russia gets Crimea.
Crimea is a very small piece of that country.
And not by extension the Ukraine, but...
It's a strategic piece.
Right.
But a small piece.
But doesn't that... And this is where I sound a little like a hawk, right? If they get away with that, doesn't that empower everyone else to just go doing it? But that's part of your decentralization, right? I mean, if you decentralize the government,
no,
there is no one to...
Crimea didn't decentralize. They just realigned
themselves.
No, I'm
saying if you decentralize the American military force, or, you know, if you decentralize the American government, right, like you were just talking about that, doing away with the IRS or whatever, then you end up with not this military front that we have now, and mm-hmm. that we're not that stick. So this doesn't become, you know, so then Russia's free to do this, and then what? Poland next? It's like we have to maintain a readiness to stop the dominoes.
Yeah, but I don't know that it's our responsibility to prevent Poland from... Or Ukraine, or I mean,
anybody else, right?
It's truly their responsibility, is it not? I mean, when it truly
that's what
comes
I was saying
it,
last week. Yeah, it should be Poland and Georgia, and I don't know the geography over there well enough to say, but all of the border states should be like, oh hell no, you can't do that, man. We're going to cause problems for you everywhere else if you cause problems down there, to where they wouldn't be able to do this.
Because it's not really about America's not going to say, oh, Ukraine, we really support your democracy or your right to popular sovereignty or whatever it is. That's why we're going to intervene. I mean, there's something else at play here.
Now, I didn't read it, but I did get one of those Alex Jones emails this week, and it
probably
one of the headlines said something about...
Unsubscribe yourself from those.
Said something... Yeah, I'm probably on a list and not just his.
No, not even that. But not even that. Not his listserv or the NSA. Or anything like that.
It's just karmically or whatever. But there was something in the headline about, you know, what was the American involvement in the weeks before? Because that's the thing is we joined this story midstream, or at least I did, right? We joined this story, the Ukrainian president was unceremoniously dumped, right?
No, he fled for Russia for his life. They were going to tar and feather him. They were going to hang him from a rope and drag him around like he was the old Duce.
But before that, I mean, it was just a straight vote, though, first, right? It was like, we're like you would, whatever, vote of no confidence or impeach or whatever. Like, no, they did it that way first, didn't they?
People in the streets with pitchforks and torches.
And that's why he left? I thought there was some action, and then it broke apart.
The timeline I'm not real sure right. of, you know, in regards to that. I think there may have been some political action, but you had the dissolution of the government based upon, you know, popular protests.
Ain't doing it no more. Right. Okay.
And just calling, you know, Yanukovych out. But it's interesting because this all really goes back to the Orange Revolution, because it's a issue of the West and the East, the West and Russia fighting over Ukraine, because it apparently is the central key to this concept of Eurasian Empire for Russia. And it will not, in my estimation, overly affect us here in America. But right. there's a lot of people that are very concerned about the declining superpower status of the good old U.S. of A. We need to get used to that, because nothing lasts forever. And if we're going to have a future after this, I mean, we should not be worried about preserving our superpower status. We should be worried about preserving our, you know, constitutional republic status, the idea of inalienable rights, etc. Because that's, you know, as we continue in this era of decline,
right,
you know, an inevitable decline, because, you know, you get large enough, you can't maintain a dynamic and strategic edge. It's what happened to the Romans.
Even trees have to shed their leaves.
It's what happened to the European powers in the 20th century, etc. I mean, at some point, I read an article just recently. Maybe it was an article. Maybe it was some history text. You know, that, you know, before the 20th century, the colonial possessions of Europe benefited them with, you know, raw materials, etc. It was a good relationship.
Right.
But after the, you know, by the 20th century, it started becoming a burden on them. It right. started costing them more money to have these colonies and protect these colonies and secure these colonies through military domination, et cetera. And it was actually a drain on their economies.
Right, because you have to.
An illusion that they were benefiting anymore.
Right.
And it really was just a projection of pride. You know, we are Belgians. We are, you know, Italians, we are Germans, British, we are British.
The sun never sets on the British Empire.
Exactly. And
now
they had to liquidate. They had to get out of there.
Right. And now they find themselves. I just find it hilarious when I hear, like, I was listening to the BBC earlier this week and they were highlighting some, I forget what the area was, but some part of Britain that wants to, they're doing their immigration pushback, right? And they're like, you should not have to speak another language to be part of the British, you know, to be here in England and this and that and everything. And they're upset about these immigrants, but these immigrants come because, and they're free to travel because they're former colonies. And so that was your own grandfather's doing. You know what I mean? That's the blowback from empire, is you got to deal with all these countries that you subjugated, and not you, but you know what I'm saying, that were subjugated and held back. Or,
well, and when economic times get a little tough, I mean, this is when people start to go, well, these people that don't look like us don't belong here, and they're really the problem. You start pointing fingers and creating right. enemies. And this is something, you know, where you see, you know, I mean, I was reading articles. These are not mainstream news articles. you know, basically saying that the Ukraine is the first, neo-Nazi government in Europe since the end of World War II. I don't know if that's true or not.
Ukraine is the first neo-Nazi government
since the end of, because, you know, the people, the prime minister, this Arseniy, I see his name and I think Arsenio. It's Arsenio without the O and a Y on the end. You know, he was just in America. I mean, they come from the Ukrainian Fatherland Party. That's the name of the party. And Yulia Tymoshenko, the jailed former prime minister, female.
Russia's just too freaking big.
Completely, totally corrupt, spent time in prison for corruption. These people, you know, have been accused of having ties to this whole neo-Nazi thing. And then you have the Svoboda Party really projecting that again. But you have just a sense that there's an underbelly of this all throughout Europe, just waiting, you know, waiting to rear its ugly head. You see it in Greece, you see it in France, you see it all over the continent. You know, but I found an article that is very interesting. You know, I talk about this, the idea of the petrodollar, the idea that the American economy and currency remains so powerful because of the need to have dollars, American dollars, to buy oil. The U.S. government feels the need to intervene in the Russian situation in Ukraine. If it wasn't for an economic reason, nobody could come up with a valid argument explaining what the U.S. has to do with the former USSR and its geopolitical issues. Is it really true that U.S. policymakers leverage these opportunities as they desperately seek for GDP growth they can't find elsewhere? Today, Russia is not governed by an alcohol addict named Yeltsin. Putin, with his roots in the KGB, clearly does not feel any intimidation by the U.S. His answer to U.S. warnings goes straight to the Achilles heel of the U.S., the U.S. dollar-based global oil system, also known as the petrodollar. Russian government officials and businessmen are bracing for sanctions resembling those applied to Iran. Should Russian foreign exchange reserves and bank assets be frozen, as being suggested as one of the possible consequences to, you know, Russian military action in Ukraine, then Russia would likely respond by wholesale dumpings of their dollar reserves and bonds. In retaliation, Russia could opt to accept only gold bullion for the payment of their gas, oil, and other commodity exports, which would lead to a sharp fall in the dollar and a large surge in gold prices. That's an interesting idea that's being put out there by the gold buggers. But nevertheless, there might be some truth to that.
But if everybody's on board with the sanctions against Russia, who's going to buy their stuff?
China.
I mean, that's... But is China going to do that?
I don't think Europe has a choice.
You don't think Europe has a choice to buy their...
To buy Russian oil or not? I think that if you were... And we are coming out of the winter, so maybe it wouldn't be as rough. But I'm pretty sure that Rosneft and Gazprom, two Russian, you know, oil and natural gas companies, supply a large portion of Europe's, you know, demand. And those pipelines that feed Western European energy needs go through the Ukraine. I don't know, the Ukraine doesn't necessarily have the natural resources, but it has the geography to transport those natural resources. This is similar to the situation in Libya, where Libya also operates. There is a large pipeline for Libyan natural gas that runs, you know, from the coast of Libya up through Sicily and on to Europe via Italy.
Under the green, ocean?
Mm-hmm, under the sea. The Green Stream Pipeline is what it's called. I mean, that's also the case in Syria. There are a network of undersea oil pipelines that go eventually to Israel that are off the coast of Syria. That, again, because Syria doesn't have a large amount of natural resource, compared to some of its neighbors, but it is strategically located. And that's what this ultimately comes down to. That's what Afghanistan is about. I mean, it's pretty amazing the consistency here.
No, absolutely.
And we also see that, you know, look at what's taking place in Venezuela right now. You have a pop, you have seemingly thousands of students in the streets wanting to have some of their concerns addressed. And now you have the former people's government of, you know, Hugo Chavez and the Bolivarian Revolution and all these things essentially falling
apart, clamping down.
But turning into, you know, a paranoid, delusional state where they are not willing to deal with their popular, you know, popular opposition to their policies. And no longer being,
they become the monster that they enslaved.
Which is what one might think. You know, one might come to that conclusion. That might be a possibility. But, I mean, Caracas is all over the place. These students are upset about, you know, continued economic, you know, stagnation. And all, I mean, Venezuela is the murder capital of the world. More people are murdered in Venezuela than any other country, I think, per capita on the planet. Which is pretty amazing. I mean, I think it's higher. Well, maybe Mexico beats them. I mean, it's rough down there. Things are not going well in Venezuela whatsoever. Now, of course, Venezuela is also the largest supply of oil in the Western Hemisphere. They say that Venezuela also might be the largest supply of oil in the world. They don't have the highest quality oil. That is the Saudi, as they call the sweet crude from Saudi Arabia, which needs the least amount of refining because it has a low sulfur content. And that's why that Saudi sweet crude is so delicious. That's why the big oil companies love it so much. But Venezuela, with a little bit murkier, dirtier crude, a little more sulfur content, might have the largest reserves on the whole planet. So
they got a lot of beachfront property, too.
Venezuela?
I don't look at the map that often.
You don't?
I love the map.
Map's beautiful. Let's go to the phones. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI.
Tigre.
You're on the radio.
Hey, guys.
Drew. Good morning, Drew.
Morning.
Marquisimeto.
It's funny you say that, Ben, about the becoming the monster, because I had originally I had said that after I remember Chavez closing down the last dissenting media outlet, and I just was shaking my head, and I'm just thinking, you're becoming the monster that they're accusing you of being, which you never were in the beginning, and you're letting them win by doing this. And this was before Chavez has died. This is before this whole thing had fallen apart. I don't know if you ever remember hearing about that.
Well, clearly, I think that was ultimately the test. Is Chavez going to be, you know, another dictator with cult of personality, or is he going to be another Fidel Castro? Because Fidel Castro, while he's not some great Democrat with a small, you know, with a lowercase d, or, you know, a proponent of, you know, individual freedom and responsibility, he has protected his country from the influence of outside forces, namely the United States.
Well,
which,
I mean,
which were very injurious to
Bolivar dictator, and he's like largely celebrated. I mean, yeah, he freed the country, but he became a dictator.
I think the idea ultimately becomes is that Bolivar was you know, of Venezuela, and he was of, I mean, he might not even have been Venezuelan, but he was doing it for the people of Venezuela, as opposed to it being a government based upon, you know, Western influence and outsiders. I think that's the concept at hand.
Yeah, and a Western puppet state, essentially, you know.
So what will you know, I mean, there's, I'm sure there's many sayings that we come up with, you know, here, but will Venezuela destroy itself in trying to protect itself from outside influence? I mean, it doesn't have a choice. It has to sell its oil to the United States. It doesn't have a choice. If Venezuela were to try to stop, America would invade and destroy, you know, whatever opposition there was.
Oh, yeah,
to that.
Yeah.
Venezuela.
I also wanted Venezuela, to mention
that would be like if Canada stopped selling oil to the United States. You know, if Canada stopped selling oil to the United States, we would invade Canada. Absolutely.
I'm a neoliberal.
Okay, Drew.
One.
Drew's not listening. Drew's just talking.
Drew would be down with that. Would you be down with that, Drew?
What did you say, Mike?
Invading Canada.
I really don't think Canada is worth invading, but...
Well, if they quit selling us oil, they got shale up there, or tar sands.
Because we've got more than enough resources here that we could green eyes if we really wanted to.
That's my thought, man. I don't think we would. I think it would be a...